Time for a Thursday Locked On Syracuse podcast. I usually like these pods because we get some time to sort of reset a little bit, evaluate what's out there. Today, there's a number
gotta
of
do them now because February is, I mean, we got a 5-game and 10-day stretch. You may not get a recap. You may not get a preview some days.
Yeah, that's the ACC sticking it to Syracuse a little bit with the scheduling.
We should talk about that too today, by the way. That just kind of popped in my head. We haven't gotten to that yet.
Thursday podcast, if you ever want to send us a question, we're going to get to a good listener question today on how many games Syracuse needs to make the NCAA tournament, which is a daunting task, but we'll evaluate that. And then we'll also catch up on some football recruiting as well. And we are going to craft our dream lineup for 2022 and the Duke game the rest of the way for Syracuse and what would be our rotations if we were Jim Boeheim. So we'll dig into all of that on the Thursday podcast.
You are Locked On Syracuse, your daily podcast on the Syracuse Orange, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome on in. Thank you for making us your first listen every single weekday. Tim Leonard, Tyler Aki. Be sure to check out the show wherever you get your podcasts. That includes YouTube, totally free and available there. If you haven't subscribed, please subscribe, smash the like button, all that good stuff over there. You can follow the show on Twitter at @LO_Syracuse as well. So a lot to dig into today, Ty. I guess real quick off the bat, do you see Sean Tucker, our guy, getting snubbed a little bit?
Oh, God.
Football Focus?
I mean, what was that? I mean, the guy had Heisman odds, and he's coming back. Like, how is he not one of the 10 best players coming back at his position? And not even, like, listen, he's not one of the 10 best players coming back in the country, all right? Both you and I can agree on that, and I think Syracuse Nation can agree on that, too.
You could even make a case.
But you could make a case, but we're not banging the drum if he's not on the list, right?
Sure.
But top 10 running backs, I mean, this guy's going to be an NFL draft pick after next year, as long as he keeps chugging along the way that he was last year. I mean, to say that he's not one of the 10 best running backs coming back, beyond me. I saw Josh Black. Josh Black needs to be either his agent or his bodyguard when Sean Tucker is in the NFL.
Yeah, no bigger supporter, right?
Nobody vouches for Sean quite like Josh Black.
Yeah. I'm going to miss Josh Black. Seemed like a great teammate.
We should get him on the show, though.
Yeah, we should. That'd be a great guy to have in the summer. Mm-hmm. Or even, you know, the way basketball season
there's
is trending. We might dip into that soon.
Next week?
But
yeah, we can make time.
Let's talk some basketball, because I think this is an interesting exercise we're going to do today, where we will pretend like we're Jim Boeheim and draft our dream rotation. There's been some experimenting in the lineups recently. We've seen Barama early. We've seen John Bull early in a game not that long ago. You know, everyone wants Benny to play more minutes. So we decided, all right, let's put our money where our mouth is, or, you know, sit down and really evaluate if we were Jim Boeheim, what would be the perfect Syracuse rotation and what would be the perfect number of minutes for each player. The general caveat here, I guess, is that game flow would happen. And that's a big part of coaching, right? Like if Joe Girard starts out and he's turned the ball over, you might want to play him less. If Symer Torrance comes in, he's doing some nice things, you might want to play him more. Taking that aside, let's just try and evaluate what would be the game plan going in of the dream rotation for Syracuse basketball. So why don't you kick us off? I don't care which direction you go. I find it the most difficult part was the forward minutes, but you start off with whatever minutes were sort of the toughest for you.
All right, so I got my lab coat on, got my beaker out.
Right.
It's bubbling at the top right now. I think something might explode soon, but here's what I've got here in my chemistry lab for Syracuse and this rotation. Let's start with the guards, all right? I think the guards are pretty easy to decipher here. Buddy, I think, is playing all 40.
Yep, I agree.
Yep, like, man, perfect world. Everything's going right. Listen, because if you're going to beat Duke on the road, everything has to be going right for you. I think you kind of realize that. You look at that Miami game, everything has to be going your way. So I think Buddy's playing 40 minutes. All right, that's an easy one. Joe, I'm going to say 32 minutes in this game.
Maybe I said 30.
I was going to say 32. I would maybe even bump him up to 34, okay? Now let's factor in the third guard here, Samir. I think he needs to play 14, 12 in that neighborhood, 12 to 14 minutes here, because I want to see some three-guard rotations out there. Because we've seen success with that lineup. It makes Joe a better player. It makes Samir a better player. It makes Buddy a better player. And I think specifically, it makes Buddy a little bit of a better defender. I think he's better suited on that back end of the zone as opposed to the top. I'd rather have the Joe and Samir top of the zone and then Buddy on that back wing spot. I think he's a little more comfortable there. And I think the trade-off, too, when you talk about the replacement value of having him in there as opposed to Jimmy or Cole defensively is an upgrade.
Yeah. No, I do think that the three-guard lineup is something that they need to use a good amount. So I said Joe 30 minutes, Samir 15 minutes, and I said that the perfect way to do it for me would be Joe plays the first seven and a half minutes as point guard, and then he plays the last seven and a half minutes as point guard, and the 15 minutes in between that of his 30 is in a three-guard lineup where you have Buddy at the forward for 15 minutes and Samir playing 15 minutes where he's on the ball and Joe is also out there. Because to me, and I'm not, you know, shattering news here, but the forwards is our biggest concern, and that's our biggest weakness. So I get that Duke's a bigger lineup, so maybe this isn't the best game for the three-guard lineup, but in general going forward, I would love to see them continue to go to the three-guard lineup. I don't think Buddy is amazing as a forward defender.
No, he's not.
But I do think he's such a positive on offense that you want him out there for 40 minutes, and he does so much for you in terms of if you need a shot, he's the only guy that can really create on his own. So it minimizes Cole and Jimmy's minutes, which I think is kind of what you need right now.
I saw people complaining on Twitter. They were tweeting at us like, Buddy's defense is terrible. Listen, if your biggest concern right now with this team is Buddy Boeheim's defense, you're pointing direction. You're pointing blame in the wrong direction
good,
right now. It's not good.
Yeah.
But while he may let up 20 points, he's going to get you 25. You take that trade-off every single day. So even though he's not a great defender by any stretch of the imagination, A, he's an upgrade at what you're getting at that position. And unlike Jimmy and unlike Cole, he's going to make up for it with about 20 the other way. So you got to take that trade-off any day of the week.
So for the forwards, I said Cole 25 minutes, Jimmy 25 minutes, and then Benny plays, so that leaves 30 available minutes. Benny plays 15 of them, and Buddy plays 15 minutes at forward, where you're using the three-guard lineup for 15 minutes. I guess that gets into the particulars of, well, there's also going to be one forward out there at every given time that Buddy is out there as well, but I think ballpark, I'm around what I need to be there for minutes wise, and I want to see Benny play 15 minutes. I don't think there's much value in playing him for 3-4 minutes. I get that he has struggled and he's definitely looked incredibly tentative on offense, but at this stage of the season, given where Syracuse is at, given how much Cole and Jimmy have struggled on defense, why not throw Benny out there for 15 minutes?
So look at who you're going to be dealing with on the other side for Duke. You've got Paolo Banchero, potential number one pick in the NBA draft, and you've got Mark Williams. That's the four and the five there. Mark Williams might be one of the most underrated players in the ACC right now. I think when he is going well, Duke is a totally different basketball team. He's an intimidating shot blocker. He's a seven-footer. He can catch lobs for you. I think you need some athleticism out there as much as possible. And that's why I'm with you. Not only am I going to say Benny 15, I'm going to say more like 17, maybe even close to 20, because you're going to need that athleticism out there if you want to have a chance against Banchero. Because like, I can already see Banchero bullying Swider, bullying Jimmy. And then it's a Jesse Edwards last line of defense. And one of the things about Banchero that makes him so good is that he's physical, but not just that, he's a controlled physical too. And that's why, like, Jesse is not a physical guy right now. He's a big guy. He's an imposing shot blocker, but he's not going to be physical on the boards. Banchero is really good at getting offensive rebounds. I think he's starting to master the art too. He's not going to be able to do this at the next level, but he can do it in college right now. I know I can't get a good shot off here, but I'm going to chuck it off the backboard to a place where I know I can get the rebound, and I'm going to put it back. It feels like an almost pad your stats sort of thing, but I think he's understanding the angles of college basketball too well at this point, where he can make those sort of plays happen. And I don't think Syracuse can do much to combat that aside from getting more athletic out there on the floor. So I want to see a lot more Benny minutes in this one, upwards of 20, because I think he can handle it. And then the other guys here, I mean, Jimmy, I think give him 30. Cole, give him 30. I don't even know if I have my minutes arithmetic adding up here, but I'm just throwing
that would add up if you're not playing Buddy at the forward at all. But if you want to do the three guard lineup, you'd probably have to chop off some of those minutes.
Okay, so then, but 28 apiece. Yeah, like
I get what you're saying. Here.
Yeah, I may not have my minutes arithmetic down here, but people get the idea.
Right. Yeah, and I do think, you know, when you do this exercise, and I encourage, like, someone tweeted us your dream rotation here, because we're always welcome to sort of feedback and your general thoughts as well, because I do think I went into this and thought, you know what, it's why is Cole playing 30 minutes? Why is Jimmy playing 30 minutes every night? It's so frustrating to watch them struggle and continue to get minutes and get run into the ground. And then you sit down and it's hard to justify playing Benny more than 20 minutes. And that's why they are playing that many minutes. So not to defend Jim Boeheim, because I do think he's missed the boat by playing Benny 5 minutes and giving him a DNP in the game before that. But it is tough to bench Cole or Jimmy for more than 10, 15 minutes a game, given that if you don't go to Benny, it's John Bull. And I actually probably like John Bull more than most, but it's hard to throw him in a game against Duke.
Yeah, you can't really justify that. If you're not going to play him against a bunch of these other ACC teams, you're not throwing them in against Duke. But although I will say this, athleticism wise makes a little more sense, but yeah, he's going to be a complete zero for you on offense. And even from a tactical standpoint, I don't think he knows the 2-3 zone as well as he should for as long as he's been in the program.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just hard to say because he hasn't been out there that much. All right, we're going to get to the center minutes in just a second, but this is it. The putt to win the tournament. If you sink it, the championship is yours. But on your backswing, your hat falls over your eyes. Is this how you want to be running your business? Poor visibility because you're still relying on spreadsheets and outdated finance software. To see the full picture, you need to upgrade to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system to power your growth, visibility, and control of your financials, inventory, HR, planning, budgeting, and more. NetSuite is everything you need to grow all in one place. Over 28,000 businesses already use NetSuite. For the new year, NetSuite has a new financing program for those ready to upgrade at netsuite.com/locked. Head to netsuite.com/locked, L-O-C-K-E-D, for the special one-of-a-kind financing offer on the number one financial system for growing businesses, netsuite.com/locked. The center minutes for me, I just said Jesse 30 minutes or until he fouls out in this game. And really that's for every game going forward. But the goal for me will be 30 and 10 for Frank. And I do think whatever minutes Jesse is in foul trouble or whatever minutes Jesse's on the bench, just play Frank Anselm because he's the second best center option.
So I think perfect world, you're going 35 and 5 here with Jesse and Frank, but I don't think the perfect world's going to exist in this situation. I think the center, You kind of have to throw out this exercise from a dream scenario and paint it as a realistic scenario when you look at the center position here. And when I think about how this is going to go down, I actually would not mind seeing Barama Sidibe get some minutes here, if for no other reason than to absorb some of the fouls that this team is going to take in this game. Because Paolo Banchero, uber aggressive, a guy that can draw a lot of fouls, and you've also got Mark Williams, a guy who's uber aggressive and can draw a lot of fouls as well. And that to me might say, you know what? You got to throw Barama out there so he can take two fouls that you can't afford to have Jesse take, that you can't afford to have Frank take. At that point, I sort of need Barama and Frank to be the foul sponge for what I'm anticipating is going to be another foul trouble night for Jesse Edwards.
Yeah, I mean, if he makes it to 30 minutes, that's a mini miracle, right? In a game like this, it's just hard to imagine.
Because you know what the game plan is. The game plan is get the ball to Paolo, let him get inside, let him get Jesse in foul trouble in the first 2-3 minutes of the game. Just abuse that matchup that you're going to have there. And if you can do that, I mean, if you're Duke, the game's pretty much over. Once Jesse's in foul trouble, the game is essentially over. Unless you've got four guys clicking offensively for Syracuse.
Yeah, and the only other thing I'd add to this rotation conversation is if you do throw out John Bull, let's say, for some athleticism on defense, just gear the lineup so that it's better designed to have a John Bull out there and have a guy that's not giving you much on offense. Like, maybe that's the Joe, Buddy, Cole Swider lineup, or Jimmy even, because I don't want to see Symeer, Frank, John Bull in the same lineup. I know that that brings athletes on defense, but then who's going to score? I mean, it just feels like sometimes we're throwing out a lot of our guys that are doing the same things in the same lineups. and it's not mixed and matched enough to kind of create a sum that's greater than its parts.
No, like we always talk about, there's a lot of lineups out there where it's four guys that can play offense, one guy that can play defense, and you never, it's like you're screwed on the defensive end, but offensively, right, you're going to be able to keep up because of what you've got out there. That's assuming the shots are falling too, but you're right. And then you see the substitution lineups where you get maybe Frank in and Benny and Samir, and it's like, all right, well, we've got, it's nice, we've got three guys that can play defense, but who's going to supply the offense here? Because right, neither of those three guys that you just subbed in are inspiring any sort of offensive hope right now. I will say this, though. I would like to see that athleticism lineup that I kind of pointed to in the last game against Clemson, where it was, it doesn't matter who your center is, whether it's Frank or Jesse, I think you're getting the same output. If anything, I would maybe throw Jesse out there, even though it was Frank that was in that lineup, just because of what Jesse can bring to you offensively. And then I would go Benny. I would go three guards. I like that lineup. I really do. I think it can bring a lot of positive things to this team from a defensive and offensive balance standpoint on the floor.
Yeah. All right, shifting gears now. Got a great listener question here that comes to us from our guy, Syracuse Hoop Central. He's at SU Hoop Central on Twitter. And he said, question for the @LO_Syracuse podcast, of the remaining 13 games, how many do you think Syracuse would need to win to make the NCAA tournament? So that's 13 regular season games left on the schedule. Then you get into, all right, you'd probably have to pick off a couple in the ACC tournament. We got a couple responses from people that said 10, and I think one said 10 plus Duke. To me, this Duke game would count as two wins, and it's weird to call it a must win because it is a road game at Duke where you're probably going to be a double-digit underdog. But if you want to make the NCAA tournament, it's a lot easier to create a path to the tournament, which is an incredibly unlikely path right now, if we're being honest, by scratching off a quad one win at Duke. Like, that elevates you. And remember the year, it was your senior year, Elijah Hughes' team, where they won at Duke after losing to Georgia Tech. Like, a win at Duke solves issues and it erases some of the losses. So if they're going to make the tournament, this does kind of feel like a must win in a weird way.
Well, I think you and I are sort of in the same boat. The tournament hopes are dead, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's on life support right now. Right. This is CPR. This is a revival chance right here. That is what this Duke game is. If you can win this game, you feel revived, you feel revitalized, because no matter how you slice it, whether you beat Duke at home or whether you beat Duke on the road, it will be a quad one win for you when it's all said and done. Like, we talked about this earlier. Like, if you could have beaten Villanova, doesn't matter, really. You're confident that game is going to be a quad one victory. You're not going to have to worry about it fluctuating at all. Like, beating Duke is going to be a quad one win. Cement it right now. It's not like the game you're playing right now with Indiana, where it's fluctuating, or what you were playing with Florida State early on, where it was fluctuating.
Right.
I think now, like, Florida State is firmly going to be a quad one victory. And now you're rooting for Indiana to be one of the better teams in the Big Ten. So that can be a quad one victory for you as well. If you can go out there and get this win against Duke, it is going to be a quad one for you. And that, those are the type of wins you need right now. I looked at it because right now Syracuse is what are they in the net right now? Like,
like around 100. I can pull it up.
I think it's like 94, 96. But I looked, Syracuse has, there are 56 teams in the top, whatever Syracuse is right now. That
they're 97 in the net.
So they're 97. 56 of the 97 teams have as many or fewer quad one wins than Syracuse right now. You need to start stacking these things, because then you can maybe build your resume a little bit. And then when people start laying things out, looking at the net, looking at KenPom, maybe things will fall in your favor. It'd be really tough. It's really tough. But a Duke victory does go a long way.
And it would be a classic Syracuse win. Really, you back in. They're destined to be on the bubble. There'd be a lot of jokes about it. Bart Torvik's T-Ranketology gives them a 3.7% chance, as of us recording here Wednesday night, of making the NCAA tournament. I think that's pretty fair. Like, that's him just running the numbers on the rest of the schedule. They're projected to finish 15-16 on KenPom. It's sad to say, but to me, there's probably a greater chance of them having a losing season than being in the bubble conversation And especially than them making the NCAA tournament. I don't know if you agree with that. I don't think they're going to have a losing season, but I do think that's the bigger concern in my mind right now.
What? So what's your number? How many wins for the tournament? Or at least put yourself in the conversation. To put yourself into
a lot of it.
I think here's the strategy you need right now is you need to put yourself into the conversation where on March 5th, let's say you beat Miami on March 5th. It's okay. Go out and win an ACC tournament game and you're in, or go out and win two ACC tournament games and you're in. You want that to be the conversation heading into the conference championships. So to put yourself in that conversation, how many wins is it?
It just doesn't really feel plausible to me unless they rattled off big wins, like go and beat Duke on the road. I know UNC stunk the other night, but that would still be a big win on the road if you got it on February 28th. Like,
it'd be a quad one.
Yeah, the only case for me is if they, starting with BC on February 19th, it goes BC, Georgia Tech, Notre Dame on the road, Duke at home, North Carolina on the road, Miami at home. Like, if you rattled off six in a row from that point on, and then you go into the ACC tournament and you win one or two, then it could be, you know, Syracuse's body of work isn't that great, but they've won eight of their last nine and they challenged maybe a good team in that loss in the ACC. And that's the case. And that's kind of what they did last year, sort of.
Yeah, I'm looking at, you need 10, and one of them has to be, I don't think it matters necessarily which Duke game you win, but one of them has to be Duke. Yeah. One of them has to. And I think, honestly, like the way that the schedule's set up right now, I might even say that this Duke game on Saturday is actually going to be the easier contest for a couple of reasons. A, you might not have to face Trevor Keels, so it might be an undermanned Duke unit. And on top of that, your next Duke game comes in the middle of the hell stretch that this team is going to be on. That is going to be part of their 5 games in 10 day stretch. And that Duke game is on the fourth of the five. So they are going to be beaten down. You play BC, Georgia Tech, Notre Dame. And one of the tough parts is you're, once you get Duke, it's part of that alternating home road. And so your mind's all over the place. And I think once you get to the middle and back end of the marathon, that's when the mind starts to wander. And let's say you do lose one of those first three games. Like, that's tough. Like, because you're probably thinking to yourself, the only way we're getting into this tournament is you have to win those BC, Georgia Tech, Notre Dame games. Like, those have to be victories for you. Otherwise, you can kiss it goodbye. And then you kind of ramp everything up for Duke. But if you're not doing that, then it's tough. So I think it's 10. One has to be Duke, and I don't think it matters which one it is.
I agree with you. Okay, let's dive into some football recruiting in just a second. Lots of football news to catch up on, but BetOnline would like to wish you a happy new betting year as we continue our march to the playoffs and beyond. BetOnline remains the number one spot for all the best sports wagering action for 2022. New year and a new updated desktop and mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code LOCKEDON, all one word, to get started. That gets you a 50% welcome bonus. They got football, basketball, hockey, boxing, UFC, and even your favorite Vegas casino games. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. So football news, we got to start with the big news that we haven't discussed on the podcast yet, but Francois Nolten, a defensive lineman from Florida. Let me just read this offer sheet because it's going to make me happy and it's going to make all the other Syracuse fans listening happy, because it's not every day that you can read like 10, 15 schools and still be naming legit programs. So
here's, and your jaw drops a little further with each one.
I know. All right. So here it is. I'll read it kind of slow, but just take it in if you're a Syracuse fan. Alabama, Florida, who we committed to before Syracuse, Penn State, Oklahoma, Texas A&M, USC, LSU, Auburn, Florida State, Kentucky, Mississippi State. Like, I'm on what, school 9, 10?
Yeah.
Tennessee hasn't been coming yet.
Yeah.
Tennessee's next up on my list here. And I'm not ranking these, but just South Carolina, Louisville. I mean, there's tons that I still haven't named. It's one of the better offer sheets I've ever seen from a Syracuse commit. And I think I'm ready to say it. I think this is the best recruiting win of the Dino era.
That's not a bad say right now. I'm looking right now. 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 SEC offers on this list. What is the SEC? A 15-team league? 14-team league? Like,
well, yeah, if you want to count Oklahoma, too.
Okay. True. Maybe. Yeah. and Texas as well, too, is a part of that. But yeah. Here's why this is the perfect – why this offer sheet in particular set up perfectly for Syracuse. A, he decommitted from a school that underwent a coaching change. Listen to some of these schools and tell me what the common trend here is. Florida, LSU, Miami, yep.
USC,
all had coaching changes.
Florida all big State, programs. Right now, Florida State didn't have a coaching change. Sorry. Yeah. Miami was the one I was thinking of. Yeah.
All those teams had coaching changes. All those teams are high profile names. And when that sort of happens and all of your assistant coaches are scrambling across the country, it's a good thing for Syracuse because that lets a team like them gives them a chance. And on top of that, I mean, these are great offers. And listen, like Alabama's probably not going to take someone ranked where Knowlton is this late in the cycle. Like Alabama tries to seal that recruiting process up. The only guys that they're going to look for right now are probably the lingering five stars that are still out there, maybe a highly rated four star. And Knowlton's one of the best three stars that we'll see come to Syracuse in quite some time. I'm really excited. And one of the important parts here is that Syracuse needs to get to the quarterback. You are losing so much on this defensive line from a season ago. A very good defensive line, might I add. That was a big part of what this team did defensively. If you bring in Knowlton to be that edge rusher, that nasty edge rusher, I really like the prospects of what he could bring because you're going to need someone to replace that production. And it may be a growing process. You're probably going to want to get a transfer on that defensive line this cycle. But who knows? Knowlton could be a guy that plays from day one. And that's probably a big reason why he committed to Syracuse.
Right. And again, shout out to the swag daddy, Nick Monroe. He's done it again. I mean, you just knew.
Can you believe?
I didn't even have to look.
To look. Like, once I heard you say shout out, I knew where this was going.
Right.
Like, the guy just does it. He gets it
and
done.
And he rakes it in Florida. It's really impressive. I don't know where we'd be recruiting wise without him. So, again,
you know what
I Nick
thought?
Monroe, if you're listening, come on the pod. We're huge fans. Yeah. I mean,
we're the biggest fans.
Biggest fans. Yeah. So,
when I. Remember when it was the off season and they were still in limbo over a couple of assistant coaches and whether or not to retain their jobs, and Nick Monroe was one of them. I mean, how could this guy's job ever be up for debate? He gets
maybe exploring other offers. That's the only thing I could think
of. The only thing it could be because like I'm surprised an SEC school, a Big 12 school, Big 10, like I'm surprised a bigger program hasn't looked at this guy, seen some of the recruiting wins that he's gotten at the institution he's gotten them at, and not said, that guy's a damn good recruiter. We need him on our staff. Even if it's a lesser coaching role and a more heavy recruiting role, we need him on our staff.
Another note on football, Elijah Clark, who you might remember, once a Syracuse target, actually gotten a little bit of a Twitter beef because – if you remember, some fans might remember, the Rutgers assistant was tweeting about how if you keep going after our guy, then we'll flip your guy, which I think was in talks of Deuce Chestnut and sort of talking about that. He was a teammate of Deuce Chestnut's, goes to Rutgers, had a very nice freshman season at Rutgers. He has now entered the transfer portal, getting tons of offers, but it looks like Syracuse is firmly in the mix here, according to some of the analysts out there, which is exciting.
The 24/7 Sports is Brian Doan. He's one of their national recruiting analysts, one of their lead guys, one of the guys who just doesn't miss, too, on some of these predictions. He's already put a crystal ball in for Syracuse. He put it in 2 days ago.
That's
and
awesome.
I think that's a good sign. And here's another important part. Elijah Clark's tweeted out he wants to make a decision quickly on this.
I'd imagine you want to get to school, like you know,
you want to get ready for a spring game. Like, is this team going to have a spring game? Who knows? That's another question. but this is a guy who, like, if you were excited about Deuce Chestnut last year, like Elijah Clark, first of all, they were teammates in high school, like you mentioned, but Elijah Clark was even a little bit higher rated, too.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a bona fide four star guy. You're talking about you could have two lockdown corners. And I think
and
about
you have Garrett Williams back.
And you have Garrett Williams. Like, and Garrett Williams probably will be his last year, but you want to stock the farm for what's coming next. And I look at a guy like Clark, this could really bolster your secondary. And on top of that, I think of if you can get a good pass rush in there. You're already bringing back Mikal Jones. Like, you're just rattling off really good names here for this team. Yeah. If you can get a good pass rush in there and maybe Knowlton adjusts a little bit faster than maybe anticipated, like, you could be looking at a really scary defense, like a top 25 level defense on the other side. And you've got a fantastic coach leading the group as well.
Yeah, they did miss on Lorenzo Hernandez, who was a Monmouth defensive line transfer target. He was down to Syracuse, Western Kentucky, picked Western Kentucky. But football is trending, man. And the last thing I'll say before we get out of here, there's a 2023 quarterback who committed to Virginia. Lenoris Sellers is his name. Very talented dude. Had an offer from Virginia Tech as well. He's the 24th rated QB in that class, 485th best player in that class, according to 24/7 Sports. And he decommitted from Virginia because Jason Beck and Robert and I are no longer there. He has a very good relationship with Jason Beck. And it feels like he said Jason Beck has already reached out to him. Syracuse has offered. Things are trending in the right direction there as well. And that's a guy that it's down the road here in 2023, but that's why you hire Jason Beck, because he elevates your program to a different status for quarterbacks. And that'd be awesome if they were able to swing him.
Yeah, just getting in talent. Because right now, and you lost Dylan Markwich too, to the transfer portal. I don't know if we've brought that up on the show yet or
He's
not.
He's going to Texas State too, which became official. And shout out to him, because he was one of the,
the first interviews guest. On
here. Yeah, great guy.
I think you flew solo on that one. But you look at, you just want to beef up your quarterback room with talent. You want to create an opportunity to have the best quarterback play. Because ultimately, the thing in my eyes that held Syracuse back from a bowl game last year was quarterback and offensive line play. You need to shore up those two positions. That should be the place you're hitting the hardest in the transfer portal and the hardest in recruiting over these next couple of years. The defense has figured itself out and has become an attractive enough place now where you are getting guys. Like, if you pull in Elijah Clark, if you pull in, you've already pulled in Francois Knowlton, or Knowlton Francois. You're starting to pull these guys in, right? You got Deuce Chestnut. You need to continue to do that, but now you got to do it on the offensive side of the ball, because right now it seemed like that was the dream. Everyone would want to go play offensive football at Syracuse because you're spitting out All-Americans at the receiver position. Now you're going to be hopefully spitting out All-Americans at the running back position, but it doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot if you don't have the quarterback spot figured out, if you don't have the offensive line figured out, and you need to create some competition in that quarterback room, because this could be a make or break year. And if Jason Beck sees potential in Lenoris Sellers and is bringing him to Syracuse, remember, Jason Beck could be out of here in a year if Dino Babers is not retained. Don't be surprised if Lenoris Sellers would be your starting quarterback game one of the season.
Yeah, I'm excited. I think so. They're after the Michigan State wide receiver transfer as well, CJ Hayes. I think he's doing his official visit this upcoming weekend.
He was at
weekend.
The Clemson game, I want to say. I think I saw that on Twitter.
Yeah, I don't know if it was he already had it or what. I haven't kept up with that one, but the big ad as well. They've done a very nice job in this offseason here. I think football is definitely trending a lot better than when it ended the season, and there were a lot of guys that entered the portal, and there was kind of mass panic there, and everyone wanted Dino fired. It feels like they've sort of righted the ship here, and Jason Beckman and I have me very excited for the offensive side of the ball. I know it's not the most talented offense ever, but neither was Virginia, and they produced some results with them. So I'm liking what I'm seeing from football. They're definitely trending in the right direction, but that'll wrap things up on our Thursday podcast here. We'll be back tomorrow, getting you a full preview for this huge Duke game. Probably the biggest game of the season so far. Anytime you go down to Cameron, it's a big one. Duke might be down one of their star players. Duke's coming off a loss. We'll give you our thoughts on what that means. We'll give you our picks of the game, Dabundo's digits, all our preview podcast stuff will be in your podcast feed tomorrow. So until then, we will talk to you guys with the full Duke preview.